Hello, Fightful Faithful. Hello, Fight. Sorry, this thing, I was trying to get it to go live for like 30 seconds and I had to like reboot it and then it went live again. But the second time it went live, it showed zero on the clock on the counter downer. And I was like, is it actually live? But it's live. Hey, it's Sour Graps. I'm your host, Alex Pulowski, and everything sucks. SmackDown. So it's extra sucky. And also, they made an inexplicable booking decision. Even more sucky. Retro Bouchon is back. Even more sucky. Some weird psychotic thing with... Braun likes to eat intestines now. So that's a thing. So yeah, we'll talk about all that. Yeah. First of all, I've decided that because last night's SmackDown just really did a number on me. I'm not going to be able to get through this episode of Sour Graps without drinking lemonade. Lemonade, the official beverage of Sour Graps. Lemonade, it gives you that sour power. Yeah. But I'm gonna be taking shots of lemonade through the entire evening. Just hoping I don't spill this all over my computer. Ooh, that's good. My wife has an old shot glass collection. I mean, it's not like she's a huge drinker anymore, but mostly it's just like, that's like a souvenir thing. Like before COVID, we would go someplace, Vegas, Jamaica, things like that. She'd make sure and get a sour glass as a, you know, commemoration thing. This one is, I don't know why, but I saw it and I had to use it. I don't know if you can see that on there. It says Superstar. So it's perfect for WWE. So here's my first shot of the night on a little tall shotty of sour lemonade. Here we go. Ah, it's good. So I'll be taking shots throughout the entire night. Hoo-wee. Okay, so first thing. They talked about Retro Bouchon and how they, you know, attacked last week, and also they've been doing things on Raw too. They turned over a car and they threw not one but two bricks through a window. I noticed on their little video package recapping it, they didn't show the second brick. I don't think the second brick was supposed to get thrown, which begs the question of why they included it in the edited episode that was taped, whatever. And then, you know, them throwing one Molotov at the stack of generators, but they edited it to look like they threw a second Molotov at the generator when it wasn't. It was actually just one guy with one Molotov threw a Molotov and everybody else goes, "Yay! Fire!" And they ran away. So they edited all that part out, all the goofy stuff. And they showed them, you know, attacking SmackDown at the end of last week. It's weird, though, that SmackDown hasn't, like, pressed charges or tried to get the cops to investigate. Although, last crime that happened on SmackDown was Sheamus attempting to commit vehicular manslaughter on Elias. By the way, where's Elias? Is he still in a coma? I don't know what happened to Elias. And he attempted vehicular. He tried to kill Elias. If he killed Elias, he wouldn't have minded, because he was planning on pinning it on Jeff Hardy. But so the act of driving a car intentionally over somebody, then fleeing the scene—that's hit and run. Also, he committed assault to knock out the guy, Jeff Hardy, who he was planning on framing. And then he picked up the unconscious body and moved it to another place, which is technically kidnapping. And he did all this to make that other guy look guilty. That's like six felonies, and the cops haven't arrested Seamus yet. So forgive me if I'm not anticipating a speedy arrest in the members of Retribution. But anyway, apparently they may be around again, but they've hired more security. And more security is a bunch of skinny white dudes in ponytails in their little, polo shirts and khakis. Black khakis. Blackies. Not like that. Just, black khakis. It's a portmanteau. Black khakis. Blackies. I don't know who those guys are supposed to intimidate. I mean, one guy looked like he was about 5'11 and 140 pounds. Like, he was definitely taller than some of the members of Retribution from last week, but he wasn't bigger. Anyway, so that's enhanced security. They beefed up security at the Performance Center so they can, try and, stop an attack by Retribution. But they explain who Retribution is. By the way, I don't know how they know this. But they say, taking advantage of current events, Retribution is here to cause chaos. Taking advantage of current events. You mean the protests against police brutality? For social justice and on behalf of anti-racist causes, anti-fascist causes, those current events. So these people have nothing to do with it. They're just taking advantage of that, which is why they dress like anti-fascist protesters. What? Taking advantage of current events so they can come in and cause chaos. Yeah, that's right. Anyway, we go right to the ring because they're going to have Big E versus John Morrison. Big E, basically he says, "What is he? I'm a former NXT champion, a former Intercontinental champion. I got this," and he does it in his very playful way. This is important for later. And then they show that's a little pre-recorded interview with Big E, a little pre-recorded interview with Morrison. Morrison talks about how the New Day is injury prone. You're going to be next. I hope you like the taste of my shoes because you're about to eat defeat. Oh, Morrison, you're doing the best with what they give you, aren't you? Anyway, match never gets started because the lights flicker. And then here's Retribution again. But this time, they appear to have brought along their big brothers. Because they definitely hired a bunch of different people now from the PC to play these parts. Because these guys are all over 6 feet. Even the women look bigger than they normally are. They managed to beat down... They chase away Michael Cole and Corey Graves. Not far enough, if you ask me, because they actually were able to come back. They chase away Cole and Corey, and then they beat down Morrison and Big E. Like, Big E has to sell for these fucking yahoos and ski masks. He gets, a chop block to the knee, and then he gets speared. So... Has anybody ever seen anybody use a spear in like a regular fight? When people get in a fight, like in the street, is a spear a move they teach you in karate class? Because it seems to be giving away the game that these are all wrestlers. I think they're going to come up with that eventually, but I don't know who that was. Is that supposed to be somebody we know? It was sort of a flippy spear, the way that Bobby Lashley hits it and then like flips off to the side. It wasn't a purely Bobby Lashley flippy spear. I'm just speculating. Which I think is what they want us to do. But yeah, definitely much bigger dudes this week as Retro Bushun. But we go to commercial with Big E laying in the ring and Morrison on the outside, and Miz comes down to check on him, and nobody else. So all the security didn't help. I think it's because we're going to find out it's an inside job. Like, these are all people who work for WWE, so they're not coming through security to get to this thing. That's the idea, I suppose. If so, you know, I'm helping them with that logic leap. It probably isn't that clever. But, oh wait, sorry. What am I doing? Drinking out of a bottle. Guys, gotta be more civilized. Drink a shot. Superstar. I think it's really funny that nobody else came down to the ring. Nobody else was there. Nobody else was. They were in the middle of the real like stuff, like the center, the inner sanctum of the performance center is what they had got to. But nobody thought to hang out at ringside to stop this from. Cool. Anywho, we come back for commercial, and Big E's in the trainer's room and Morrison's in the trainer's room, and a bunch of different wrestlers are back there. Miz is talking to Morrison. He's like, I'm sorry, man. I was on the phone with Maurice. Otherwise, I would have been out there sooner. I'm sorry. Morrison's fine. He's like, this would have been okay if it wasn't for that tweet you sent. And I forgot to look it up. Did Big E send a tweet that I missed about that was like, calling out Retro Bushun. I'm going to look it up. But apparently, the story of this is that he sent a tweet that got all the Retro Bushun mad, but I didn't see it. I'm looking for it. I don't see it here anywhere. Oh, okay. So yesterday he sent a tweet about Retro Bushun that says, rancid, reminiscent of a 6-month-old gallon of milk sitting at the bottom of a Food Lion dumpster in the middle of summer. Remove retribution from my brand, please and thank you. Well, them's fighting words, Mr. E. Mr. Langston, you can't say that about Retro Bushun. They're going to come looking for you. And they did. Also of note, something that he sent. He had another black armband. He wears them all the time. And last night's was for George Stinney. George Stinney was a black boy. He was 14 years old when he was executed. He didn't do it. The youngest American ever to be sentenced to death. He was 14 when he was executed in 2014, 70 years after his death. His conviction was vacated because he didn't fucking do it. So, anyway, that's what the people that you're making fun of with Retro Bushun, that's what they're protesting against. Anyway. Backstage, Big E gets yelled at by Morrison and Miz, who leave. And then King Corbin comes out and he's like, no one's going to come and get my kingdom. Not while I'm here. I'm going to stop them. And Big E gets a really rousing speech about how, you know, I may be bruised, but I'm not beaten. Maybe knocked down, but I'm not defeated. And it's very rousing and it's very serious and he's a fantastic orator. You can't watch his earlier speech that he gave on the way to the ring, and where he was playful and funny, and then watch this speech where he was dead fucking serious and just a powerful speaker. You can't see that, see him doing both things and not think, oh, this guy's a fucking star. Let's do stuff with this guy. Let's give him a singles run, push him to the moon, make him the fucking WWE champion. I mean, you could do that, but you'd be stupid. You could not think those things about him, that he's a star. You could not think that he's a superstar. But you'd be wrong, and you would be stupid. So, then he's going to go back in the ring later tonight and beat John Morrison. They're going to have again. Then Sheamus walks in, and Sheamus's character now is just the dude from the bar fight. Like, he's got the jacket and the hat and a wife beater on underneath. And the hands taped. He's like, "Hi, fella, I'm here. Yo, you're not, you're shite." And I don't know what he says. Anyway, Sheamus mocks Big E, and Sheamus taunts Shorty G, who's there hanging out with the good guys in the locker room, which is weird, but we'll get to that later. Sheamus says, "I'm gonna beat up Shorty G later tonight because that's what I do. I'm sure I'm Sheamus." Anyway, he says, "Everyone's on my side," and then they all leave with him. So I guess they do. Now there's a bunch of extra security standing around the ring where they probably should have been in the first place. But again, they're all like skinny white dudes with ponytails, so not very intimidating. Okay. It's a tri-brand battle royal, right? Which is going to determine who's going to face Bayley at SummerSlam. So the potential for this was, like Keith Lee, limitless. You could have done literally anything with this. You could have had an NXT superstar win it. You could have had somebody from Raw win it. Somebody who never had an opportunity at a title before. You could have had somebody from Raw or NXT win this match to get the title shot versus Bayley, and then beat Bayley and have like a switch brand thing or a call up from NXT, which was unexpected. That'd be cool. Or you could have somebody from SmackDown win it. Admittedly, less shocking, but still a possibility. Let me tell you what they did do. So Bayley and Sasha, who are great, and I love them. I want to preface everything that I'm about to say with Bayley and Sasha are great, and I love them. Bayley decides she's going to be the ring announcer now. So she takes out a bunch of SmackDown note cards and she steals the mic from Greg Hamilton and tells him to piss off. And then she announces the people who are going to be in the match. They introduce the Iconics. And they say we beat them all the time and it's a lot of fun. So I wouldn't mind beating them again. They introduce Tegan Nox and Shotzi Blackheart, and then they're losers. Because we already went down to NXT and beat them for the tag titles. Then they introduced Lacey Evans, like, "Oh, there's somebody else who I already beat. How's your daughter doing?" Then the next entrant is, and Bayley's like, "Well, this can't be right." And it's Asuka. Asuka, who already has a guaranteed title shot against Sasha Banks for the Raw Women's title, is in a match to determine the number one contender for the SmackDown Women's title, held by Bayley. Which which doesn't seem right to me. Seems like there are a lot of other women who deserve an opportunity to be near the top of the division who aren't being pushed in any way. And this is a great opportunity for them to get that push, but like not even like with some kind of weird storyline, but actually via winning a match. Wouldn't that be interesting? Apparently not. Because Asuka's here. She runs down. And she beats them all up. And we go back to the from the break. Now, the rest of the women are not introduced. They're just in the ring when we get back. So here are all the women. Okay, we already announced Billie Kay and Peyton Royce, Lacey Evans, Tegan Knox, and Shotzi Blackheart, right? Here are, and Asuka. Here are the women who are also in the Battle Royal who were not introduced. Tamina. Well, fuck Tamina. I'm sorry, but fuck Tamina. Ruby Riott and Liv Morgan. I mean, not important at this point. They've got a thing going on with Peyton Royce and Billie Kay. But anybody who's on Raw and is then going to come over in going to be on SmackDown, I feel like needs an introduction just so you're not, if you're a SmackDown viewer mostly, you're not confused by this. Naomi is in the match. Dana Brooke is in the match from SmackDown. Nikki Cross is in the match, who, again, has had enough fucking title shots at this point. Sorry. She has. So maybe she should just sit this one out. And also, from Raw, Shayna Baszler and Bianca Belair, who, if they were to win this match, I could absolutely see either of them being pushed real quick and becoming a champion. You could easily do that. You could. They're not going to do that, though. So that is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 women, one of whom definitely shouldn't be in it in Asuka. So 16 women. And let me find the women who are on the rosters and active, as far as I know, who are not in this match. Natalya and Zelina from Raw. They are on Raw and active women competitors. I do not believe Lana is an active competitor. Mickey hasn't had her re-debut yet. I'm not counting her. That's two more. On SmackDown, Carmella, who hasn't been seen since the fucking Money in the Bank match, and also whose visage was prominently displayed on a video package that says, who could be in the Battle Royal? Who might win? Who might go to SummerSlam? Carmella was one of the who's. Where's Carmella? If you're sending her things like, hey, Carmella, where are you? Or, hey, Carmella, you should be in the ring right now. Carmella on Twitter will retweet that and say, tell me about it. I'd like to be in the ring right now. So it's not because she doesn't want to be there. That's weird. She's a former champion. Former two-time champion, I believe. That's weird. Also, from SmackDown, Mandy and Sonya, who are... I'll just go into this right now and not bring it up later. They're going to have a hair versus hair match at SummerSlam. So that's much more important than getting a title shot. You know, why would either of these women want to be SmackDown Women's Champion? It's much more important that they shave the other woman bald. That's way more important. I agree. I don't agree. That's stupid. At least put them in the match and have them eliminate each other at the very beginning. Have them in the match. They're standing there across the ring from each other. Everyone else stands still and watches them fly at each other, start tearing at each other's eyes, and they back into the ropes and they topple over together and they're eliminated. And then they fight to the back because they can't keep separating, right? At least that gives them a reason to be in the match because they would want to be champion. Why are they not in the match? That's weird. Then you announce the hair versus hair thing after this, because this is the first thing that happens in the night, like after the Big E and the Retro Bushan. The first match is this. So have that I described happen. Then later in the night, have them say, you know what? That's it. I'm had it with you, hair versus hair. Absolutely, I accept. And then that's it. There you go. You got it. I just fixed it for you. And from NXT, again, women who I think are currently active and could compete. Aaliyah, well, Mercedes Martinez, certainly could compete, would be great. Candice LeRae, who they're not fucking doing anything with anyway. Mia Yim, Raquel Gonzalez, I'm assuming could. You haven't seen her in a while. Dakota Kai, I know she's got a title shot at TakeOver 30, but why not be in this match too? Xia Li, haven't seen her in a while, possibly. And Rhea Ripley, who they fucked over forever anyway, so why not? Why not have her in the match? It doesn't fucking matter. It doesn't fucking matter. Rhea Ripley, whatever. We've ruined her fucking career. She's 23 years old. Fuck that. It's much more important for her to be involved with a Robert Stone brand feud. Now, I'm going to really enjoy the Mercedes Martinez versus Rhea Ripley match when we get it eventually. But Rhea Ripley should be in any number one contender's tri-brand battle royal. That goes without saying. So, 11 extra women that could be in this match that aren't, because reasons. So, Iconics quickly eliminate Ruby and Liv, and the Iconics are eliminated, and they, Ruby and Liv, attack the Iconics at ringside. By the way, Bayley and Sasha, who again are great, are standing at ringside, and they're just making fun of everybody in the ring, and they're like yelling directions. Go, hey, take her out, whatever, you know. So Ruby and Liv attack the Iconics after they're all eliminated, thus furthering that feud. So cool. Dana goes through the middle ropes and Nikki goes through the bottom rope, I guess. And she does the thing where she puts Dana in the apron, beats on her, and then leaves her there. And we don't see Dana again until there's three people left, because they're doing that fucking thing that they always do. So Nikki goes back in the ring, and Tamina no-sells the hell out of Nikki Cross, which really speaks well for how much they pushed her as a title contender. Tamina no-sells Nikki, then eliminates her. Then Bianca Belair and Tamina go toe-to-toe. And Bianca does this crazy power move to eliminate her. Just like lifts her up from, like, stands behind her, gets her in a chicken wing, lifts her straight up, and then dumps her face first over the top rope. Look great. You watch that and you go, why, if you have the access to this woman, why would you ever book her to lose anything? Imagine having this woman and not booking her to win all of the titles. Bianca Belair is so fucking special. Jesus Christ. She also was wearing beautiful SmackDown blue last night. She deserved an entrance of her own. She really did. Lacey eliminates Naomi, so that fucking feud's gonna last fucking forever. Shotzi then eliminates Lacey. Then Shayna Belair gets Shotzi in the Kirifuda clutch over the top rope and, like, dangling her there. So Lacey, who has been eliminated and does this illegally, but there's fucking 12 refs on the outside, so none of them actually can enforce any rules. Lacey, who's been eliminated, grabs Shotzi by the legs and pulls her to the ground, which is an illegal elimination and should not count, but nobody enforces fuck all in this match. If this was alcoholic lemonade, I'd be shit-faced by now. So Tegan Nox squares off with Bianca, and Bianca eliminates herself by rushing at Tegan Nox, who was standing in front of the ropes. So Bianca is stupid, according to the booking of this match. Shayna goes to do the same thing, the dangling knocks over the top, off the top rope by the Kirifuda clutch. And then Dana does the same fucking thing that Lacey does. But Lacey's like, Dana's not, she's in the match, but she's not in the match. You know, like she didn't get eliminated, which by the way, can we just start a 10 count? Like if you go out under the bottom rope, you got a 10 count to get back on the apron. You can stay on the apron, but you got to get back on the apron. You can't just, we can't just have you got everybody just hanging out on the floor. If I was in a battle royal, the first thing I do is, because they're never going to enforce this rule, why wouldn't everybody in the battle royal just drop to the floor of the ring, onto the mat, roll out under the bottom rope, and just stay there until everybody has been eliminated but one person, and then get back in the ring? Why would you ever get, why would you ever, why? Because they're not going to force the fucking rule. So, okay, you know what? I'll be generous. A 15 count. If you've been, if you go out through the middle rope or through the bottom rope, you have 15 seconds. And there's enough refs there, Lord knows, to go up to the one person who went through the bottom rope and say, you got 15 seconds. I'm counting. 1, 2, 3, 4. Until that person gets up and gets an, gets on the apron. And if they don't do that, they're eliminated. Just add that as a rule, because the fucking hang out on the floor thing is bullshit. So anyway, Dana Brooke, the great Dana Brooke, eliminates Tegan Nox, who would have been helped so much by this. Tegan Nox getting a quick, awesome shot at Bayley for the women's championship to really to say, like, say, hey, NXT is a third brand. Here we go. Let Tegan Nox and Bayley fucking tear shit up, because they can go, both of them. Why wouldn't you do that? Weird. Anyway, Asuka is still in the match. At this point, she hasn't eliminated anybody, as far as I can tell. But she eliminates Dana with a flying hip attack. And then Shayna tries to do her Kirifuda clutch, you know, dangle somebody over the top rope. But Asuka hits a footing on the apron and then does a little flippy dippy, grabs Shayna around the head from behind and throws her over the top. So Asuka wins a shot at Bayley's title. She already has a shot at Sasha's title. And I fucking hate this. I love Asuka. I think she's doing amazing work. I think Bayley and Sasha are two of the MVPs of the COVID era of WWE. And that doesn't fucking matter. Because I'm going to try and not scream. Because you have all the women I just named across all the brands. And you decided that, with the possible exception of Io Shirai and Dakota Kai, because they have an NXT championship match at TakeOver 30, and with the possible exception of Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville, who hate each other so much they can't be bothered with a title shot. So I'm going to eliminate those four from this discussion. But everybody else, all those names that I mentioned, Asuka, oh, sorry. Obviously, she meant, she means something. Tamina, Tegan, Shotzi, Ruby, Liv, Shayna, Bianca, Peyton, Billy, Naomi, Lacey, Dana, Nikki. Continuing. Natalia, Zelina, Carmella, Aaliyah, Candice, Mia, Raquel, Xia Li, and Rhea fucking Ripley, and Mercedes Martinez. Don't
matter. They don't exist. You've effectively, by having Sasha and Bayley hold the tag titles, and each of them have the Raw, one of them has the Raw title, and one of them has the SmackDown title, then you have a third woman who is the number one contender to both of those singles titles, and at this point, we don't have number one contenders for the tag titles. You have decided that of all of those women, you've consolidated your entire women's division, especially on the main roster, but even because you have this tri-brand battle royal, you've decided now that all of the women across all three brands, only three of them matter. You've consolidated all, eliminated all of them. In the name of efficiency, we're going to eliminate everybody else but these three. Everybody else is just, you know, we're going to cut some dead weight. Your main competition, and it's getting more and more main, is AEW. On Wednesdays, they're already beating Raw in the coveted demos. If trends continue and Raw keeps dipping, and, well, AEW isn't surging, but they're staying steady, who knows what's going to happen when AEW starts firing up really hot angles once the crowd is back in there. When they finally pull the trigger in AEW on a Four Horsemen type deal with Cody and FTR and Hangman Page up against Cody and the Young Bucks and I don't know who the fourth guy there would be. Moxley, just to slum it. That's appointment viewing for all real wrestling fans. It just fucking is. And if it isn't, you're a fucking WWE bootlicker. I want WWE to be the best product out there. I do, because they employ some of the best wrestlers and they won't fucking use them. The thing about AEW is their one giant glaring flaw. They don't do shit with their women. They have a whole fucking women's deadly draw tag tournament. They won't even put it on their fucking TV. They have the champion like come out once in a blue moon to wrestle a match on TV. They got all these women who are languishing in their version of catering. They have a few matches every week on their YouTube show. You could really put a dent in AEW if you started saying, we have the deepest women's roster in the history of wrestling. Let's fucking use it. Let's get as many women out there to look great and to be taken seriously and to be thought of as the next big thing as possible. We already have established, we already know that Becky, when if she ever comes back, and Charlotte, when she comes back, they're top of the line. Bayley and Sasha have proven that this whole time. They are also at that level. Asuka has proven she is also at that level, so they don't need this. Shayna Baszler, Bianca Belair, they need this. Rhea Ripley, she fucking needs this. Naomi, Carmella. As much as I fucking hate her character, Lacey Evans. They need this. Tegan Knox, they need this. Ruby and Liv, they need this. Push them. Give them something to fucking do. You decided they don't matter. You've been handed a gift by your biggest competitor who doesn't have the women, or if they do, they don't know what to fucking do with them. You've got all the women. And you decided that all but three of them should fuck off. Fucking idiots. Now, I will say this. If I thought for a second this meant something intelligent and smart was going to happen with the creative, a way to break up Sasha and Bayley, have them somehow both lose to Asuka, and Asuka's now the champ with SmackDown and Raw belts. And then the week after, at a fucking pay-per-view called Payback, they're having a week after SummerSlam for some fucking reason. That, and at that place, they're going to have Bayley and Sasha defend the tag titles. I guess they could lose those there. Then they could be at each other's throats. We'll finally get that feud. At what?
We're going to save that for Survivor Series? I don't buy any of that shit. I just think that Vince doesn't think that there's any new stars to make. So he's not going to try. Imagine all those women on your roster and you continue to give preferential treatment to people who don't need it. Well, on the other hand, it's Vince McMahon. So when has he ever given a leg up to anybody? Bayley isn't happy backstage about having to face Asuka because, you know what? Just on Raw, we saw Asuka tap out Bayley. So guess who's not excited about Bayley facing Asuka? Me! Because I just saw it! Now listen, the match is going to be great! These women have great matches against each other. I just fucking saw them have a great match on Monday. I don't need to see it again 6 days later. I've also seen Asuka versus Sasha quite a lot. I don't need to see it again. Just say it. Asuka jumps them and beats them up. So, Mandy Rose cuts a very intense promo about Sonya Deville. I talked about this. She challenges her to a hair versus hair match. She says, you think I've had anything handed to me? Well, was it handed to me when I had to work three jobs for myself through college? You're telling me that I was a bikini contest winner? Well, yeah, I was. So what? And then Sonya has a promo later. It's like, yeah, well, everybody says you've had everything handed to you your entire life. You're just some dumb blonde that doesn't deserve it. Well, maybe everybody says that about you because it's true. So yeah, y'all have my... I have my hair versus hair match with you. See you at SummerSlam, Baldy. And then we'll see. There was some scuttlebutt about Sonya going to Hollywood. So I could just definitely see Vince being like, well, you want to go to Hollywood? You're going to go there bald. Ah, ha, ha, ha. So, Nikki Cross and Alexa Bliss have a very odd, tenuous reunion backstage. Cross is like, hey, I'm really sorry about how I overreacted to losing to Bayley a couple weeks ago and I shoved you and then the Fiend came and he kidnapped you to the Nether Realm. And he probably, you know, did stuff to you. I'm really sorry about that. Hey, we're with Braun, right? Why wouldn't he help you? That's all crazy, huh? And Alexa's like, yeah, totally crazy. I'm going to go now. So she wants to get some answers from Braun. Sheamus versus Chad Gable, not Shorty G. Although they decided now, apparently, That heel turn they had with Shorty G attacking Matt Riddle, with Chad Gable attacking Matt Riddle, because they were going to definitely have to get rid of the Shorty G name if they're going to turn him heel. Maybe somebody explained it to Vince, and he was like, oh, no, we can't lose the name, pal. That's the best part. So they had him face Sheamus, and he fought valiantly and eventually got his ass kicked. Just like their feud back in January. So later, I'm gonna do this now. Later, Matt Riddle, who may or may not be guilty of rape, I just have to put that out there. Matt Riddle is backstage and he's being interviewed, and he he's talking about how, you know, hey man, I came here to bro down and throw down, dude. Bro. What if I call you bro, Caleb Braxton? Shorty G comes up and he says, oh God, you know, geez. Feel really bad about what I did. That's just not me. I shouldn't have done that to you. It's my fault. We bros. Fist bump. So that is Shorty G's The Incredible disappearing heel turn that he had that came out of nowhere that were like, hey, cool. I'd love to see vicious Chad Gable like really hurting people. Remember that thing I pitched? They're not going to do, apparently, where King Corbin uses Chad Gable as his, like, shooter, as his Dean Malenko from mid-90s ECW, where he just sends Chad Gable out there to legitimately hurt people. That'd be so good for Chad's career, but nope. Because as he and Riddle are making up like bros, they're broing down. Corbin runs up and hits Riddle from behind, and Shorty G does nothing about it. Just sits there like,
I would love to get involved and intervene on your behalf, Mr. Riddle, but I'm so short.
So, so then Baron is like, says to get Chad Gable again, who hasn't even moved in a way to help anybody. Thanks, Chad. I knew you could amount to something. And then he's like, oh, gee, what did I do? I should have done something. Ah, gee, Chad. Yo, wait, you stepped in it. Really, you stepped in it for sure this time, Chad. Ah, gee whiz. Ah, nuts. So that's the incredible disappearing, reappearing, disappearing again, heel turn. Disappearing. Hey, Matt, I'm really sorry for what I did. I should never have done that. Can we be bros? Reappearing, not stopping Baron Corbin from attacking Matt Riddle. Disappearing again.
Ah, oh, gee. Oh, no. I really should have stopped that. Ah, oh, gee. I'm so odd. Ah, oh, Shorty G.
Fucking stupid.
Fucking stupid.
Also stupid. They keep talking about how, Sheamus isn't the best role of his life. He just lost a feud where during the feud he had piss thrown on him. He lost by DQ last week. The best role of his, he's a former WWE champion. People are fucking assholes who lie to us on a daily fucking basis. I hate it. So, hey, Joseph Parks, that character from TNA is here. Abyss would occasionally become Joseph Parks. Mild-mannered accountant-type dude in a suit. And anyway, AJ is apparently tired of facing challenges who aren't worthy. He deems worthy. So he's created a statistical analysis system. So they're in the ring. Joe Parks is standing there behind him with the suit, and they got a big old whiteboard thing on an easel. And AJ says he's debuting. We got more pressing things to matter. Like, who's gonna face the SummerSlam? So he's gonna he watches baseball. He looks at batting averages. He also looks at statistics while he watches football. Now I'm a bit of a nerd myself, so I'm gonna come up with my own statistics thing. I'm gonna say I hired a team to come up with. So what he says, the phenomenal intercontinental statistics system. PISS.
Get it? P-I-S-S spells piss. Piss. He called his own system piss. That's the joke. We made a joke and we put it on the TV. Laugh at it.
You know what actually would have saved this? You know, the joke is that going around is that AJ's an idiot, right? You know, the flat earth shit. So why not play into it? Why not say the phenomenal Intercontinental Statistics System, FISS? Because, get it, phenomenal sounds like it starts with an F, right? So then he, Joseph Park says, AJ, it's actually P-I-S-S. P-I-S-S? That spells piss. It's F-I-S-S. Phenomenal. Yeah, AJ. Phenomenal starts with a P, a P-H. Sometimes when a P-H is at the beginning of a word, it sounds like F, you know? Like phone. Phenomenal starts with an F? Yeah, you're the phenomenal one, AJ. On your gear, on your shirts, it says P1. What did you think the P stood for, if not phenomenal? Oh, I thought I was like player one. Like I'm the number one player like Mario and everybody else has to play Luigi. No. It doesn't matter. F-I-S-S, P-I-S-S, here's what matters. And he rips down the thing. Nobody's allowed to face me. See? Isn't that better? I mean, it's stupid still, but isn't it better? I think it's better. I think it's better, so it is. Anyway, the whole joke is, on the ranking system, nobody is allowed to face him. Nobody works on, nobody has enough piss to face him. But then Jeff Hardy comes out to a pop, and these guys haven't wrestled since 2013 in TNA, never wrestled in WWE. So it's kind of cool to have these guys in the ring talking to each other in this way. And AJ says that I respect the hell out of you, your journey and everything. We have a lot of respect for each other. You know, we come, you know, we've faced it a lot. I respect your journey you've had to come on, you know, go through to get back here from recovery or whatever for your addictions. And I know it's a lot of people in the WWE universe who'd love to see Jeff Hardy versus AJ Styles. So am I going to let to have a match with you for the Intercontinental title? Hell no. Of course not. I'm not going to do that. You don't deserve it. Jeff punches him. Jeff punches AJ and then takes the pen and writes big on the whiteboard, Jeff Hardy, and then signs it. Then later, they're walking around with a whiteboard backstage, and Caleb Braxton's like, are you upset about how, you know, Jeff Hardy did that? He's like, you're going to have a match with him? Like, no, I'm not going to have it. He assaulted me. He doesn't respect the title or him. Doesn't respect analytics or piss. If there's one thing we do know that Jeff Hardy does respect, it's piss. Am I right, folks? Remember that where he threw a big old pint glass of piss at Sheamus? Ooh, boy. Here's what happens if you mess with AJ, says AJ. You get erased. So he tries to erase the Jeff Hardy who wrote his name on the whiteboard. And then no, it's written in permanent marker. So, Cesaro and Shinsuke Nakamura are talking about how small Grand Metalik and Lince Dorado are. They think they're like bugs. What do we do with bugs? We squish them. And then they creep up and they steal the titles and they take them to the ring with them. So it's Grand Metalik versus Shinsuke Nakamura. It's a good match. These guys work well together. The finish comes when Kalisto shows up. Remember Kalisto? He'd been out for like 8 months, apparently. Jesus Christ. I didn't know it was that long. And while he was out, he did a lot of crunches. Because Kalisto, I mean, he wasn't in bad condition, but he was never really defined. Like he always had kind of a little doughy body for a super athletic cruiserweight. But he is shredded. My God, that guy's got abs on top of abs. Tony Nese looks at his abs and goes, "Aww, abs! So many abs, and just like no body fat at all in that guy now." So, they help. He helps Lince double team on Cesaro on the ramp. Metalik takes advantage, hits a big elbow drop to beat Shinsuke Nakamura, which means I guess the Lucha House Party has a title match versus Shinsuke Nakamura and Cesaro at SummerSlam. Probably. Almost certainly. Definitely. But, hey, if Lucha House Party wins, are they going to free bird the titles now that Kalisto's back? Might be interesting. So, yeah, I'm going to skip the talk about the Matt Riddle stuff. And then, Alexa Bliss has a very important interview about Braun Strowman and how they were friends. And she really thought that maybe her and Braun, maybe, I don't know, maybe one day, maybe romance might be in the cards. Me and Braun, we cared about each other so much. And I really thought he was a good friend of mine. And, oh, but then he said that. Yeah, this is great. The interviewer asked, he said, "I don't give a damn about Alexa Bliss last week. How did that make you feel?" And then Alexa Bliss does one of those things. She goes, and she looks off to the side because there's something just off camera that makes her very sad. This is fine. This is fine. Big E beats John Morrison. This is good. Miz is on commentary, saying a lot of mean stuff about Mandy Rose. Right. This is the other thing. So, Miz is saying bad stuff about Mandy, right? So Otis apparently heard this from backstage, and he goes, "I better go out there with my Money in the Bank briefcase." By the way, we're going to talk a little bit later during the main event about the main event program versus for the Universal title on SmackDown with Braun Strowman, who is like super evil now, and the Fiend, who is a weird, like, if the devil could be a tweener, that's the Fiend. That's the program, which makes it even more silly and stupid that they put the Money in the Bank briefcase in the hands of that oaf, Otis. What the fuck is he going to do against a mega-powered Braun? Or against the Fiend, for that matter? What an odd, stupid choice it was. In hindsight, and as I said at the time, why would you do that with the Money in the Bank briefcase? Anyway, he comes out walking around holding it with his belly jiggling.
And he looks really angry. He doesn't like Miz very much. And so he says, the Miz on commentary, I didn't even say anything. And I wrote this down. Michael Cole, tattletale that he is. Miz says, I didn't even say anything. And Michael Cole said, he said a lot of things, Otis, a lot of things. Good job, Michael. Way to be impartial there. Also, way to not be an idiot. Oh, wait, that's the opposite of that. So, right after this, though, the lights start to flicker. Oh, no, that means the Retribution's around. So all of the locker room, women and men, all of them, are standing out at ringside when they come back from the break after the flickery lights. So they're going to stop. They're definitely going to stop. Retribution. Whatever Retribution wants to do, they're going to stop him. Except there's a camera backstage, and we see Retribution is back there, and they're terrorizing everybody. They're, like, doing big moves to the refs onto tables. They're terrorizing poor Caleb Braxton, who's, like, in the fetal position in the corner. Some poor guy's taking a shit in the bathroom, and they open the door, see him in there, and then lock him in the bathroom. And then one guy paints with spray paint on the wall, W, and a W underneath the W, which is the WWE logo, don't you know? And then a big circle and a line through it. Yeah! No WWE! We are anti-WWE! That's right. And now I want to root for them. Because we share similar interests. They're against the WWE. I am also against the WWE. Do you have a pamphlet, my good sir? Some literature I might be able to peruse to see if your platforms might coincide with my beliefs. I would like to join, is what I'm saying. If Retribution came around to my door saying, let us tell you the secrets of being anti-WWE, I would happily let them in and offer them a glass of sweet, sweet, sour, sour lemonade. But here's the deal. Who's WWE? Vince. If you are anti-WWE, you are anti the decisions that Vince makes. You are anti firing a bunch of people in the middle of a fucking pandemic to save some money that it turns out you didn't need to fucking save because you had giant profits. You are anti-terrible booking decisions. You are anti-not putting over any new stars. You're anti all that stuff. So when I see a WWE logo with the circle and the no sign through it, I don't think Retribution. I think Vince Busters. Who are you going to call? Vince Busters. Those guys, rebrand yourselves, Retribution, as Vince Busters. You'll have a whole bunch of new recruits. Especially if you get like proton packs where you could like fire lasers at Vince McMahon. Listen, I'm not even going to take a cut of that great idea. Next week, I want to see members of Retribution, who are now calling themselves Vince Busters, wearing proton packs that shoot lasers at Vince McMahon. And I guarantee you, it will get ratings up. It will. It'll be great. Anyway, while all this is happening, well, they're doing graffiti on the wall and putting refs through tables and terrorizing poor, poor Caleb Braxton. Nobody knows this is happening, right? Because they're not showing it on the Titantron. Everything that happens backstage gets shown on the Titantron. Asuka lost her title because she ran backstage to stop Bayley from beating up Kairi Sane. Why does that get shown on the Titantron? But this doesn't. Doesn't the cameraman who's filming it have a live feed to the truck? Why would they not put this on the Titantron? Is Retribution running the truck? That's possible. Retribution is run by Kevin Dunn. I've just cracked the code. So anyway, one of the refs gets away from everything, runs back, runs to the ringside and says, everybody come back, go backstage and stop it. Stop it from happening. So everybody runs backstage, except for Morrison and Big E. Big E wins with the stretch muffler. It's a pretty good finish for him. But before that happens, they all run backstage and they find that Retro Bouchon's already left. They took their proton packs with them. And they find the poor guy sitting in the bathroom naked or whatever, pants down, because he was taking shit. Then Tucker, and I forget who else was with him, maybe Tamina, they're looking at the big WWE logo with the line scratched through it, the Vince Buster symbol. And Tucker's like, what could this mean? What could this possibly mean? It's weird. You've created a faction of heels. They're heels because they're based on Antifa, and Antifa is bad. That's what you're saying. And who they're against, they actually are kind of anti-fascist. Because WWE is definitely a fucking dictatorship. Nothing happens there without one man deciding it. You can pitch ideas to him, but the Führer might have your legs cut off. We wonder why Vince does such good business with Mohammed bin Salman over in Saudi Arabia. It's because they're the same dude. Anywho, let's get to this fucking thing. Biggie wins and whatever. So, main event. Okay. So after the whole thing, after what happened, Biggie stands tall. He wins. He's been selling his knee injury this whole fucking match, like a champ. Miz checks on Morrison. And Big E's standing at ringside and gets leveled by a running bro kick from Sheamus. Sheamus is now back in his street togs. Earlier in the night, did I mention this? Sheamus takes it upon himself to tell two members of the security detail, knock off for the night. Go have yourself a pint. No one's going to attack here while I'm around. Well, anyway, Sheamus hits Big E with a bro kick. Right? Right after that, as Sheamus, I guess, would continue the beatdown, he has to step aside because here comes the Strowman train. And Braun's music hits and he walks out and he's got a freshly shaved head. Now, I didn't want to mention this a while back, but I've been noticing Strowman's hairline was receding quite rapidly. And it was gonna become a serious situation they were gonna have to handle, and they handled it fantastic. That man has a perfect bald head. Coming from a man who shaves his head, I know of what I speak. He looks great. Got this big old bushy beard and the shaved head. People are saying it just looks like Big Show. Now Big Show wishes he looked this fucking good with a shaved head. God damn it, friggin' big bad. Big bald voodoo zaddy. God damn it. Woo. Give me the tingles looking at Braun. Oh my God. I had an awakening in my pants. But then he kind of ruined it. Because he cuts a promo about how evil he is. And he yells at the camera. He says, I told you what I was going to do if I went into that swamp and I came out alive. I was going to be the meanest son of a bitch you've ever seen in your life. To the Fiend, I want you at SummerSlam. And then I'm going to rip you limb from limb. I will eviscerate you. And then you will lie on the floor looking up at me as I consume your entrails.
And it was at the consume your entrails portion of the proceedings that I audibly gasped.
My stars. Consume your entrails. That's your lower intestine. It's full of poop. You don't want to, you don't want to eat his intestines, Braun. There's poop in there. Braun, don't eat the poop. Don't eat the poop, Braun. That's a bad idea, Braun. But I don't know. Maybe he likes. Maybe he likes poop. So then Alexa Bliss's music hits, and Alexa Bliss comes out, and she, Braun, like, won't even look at her. Parts of this were actually compelling, but I don't think that the execution was right. Braun, like, looking ahead, not being able to look at Alexa is interesting. You know, we don't really sure about how, what is going on in that big old bald head of his. But Alexa is like, we'd be friends for years. Like, oh, we're not friends. We were never friends. I was just a pawn. You used me to get me in your car and sing songs. And I was like, well, you know, kinda. I mean, it was at that point, I think, Team Little Big with the mixed match challenge, where Braun and Alexa was bad at the time and Braun was good, I think is the case. But anyway, they both helped each other out a little bit. And one of the things that they did was they had Braun be cutesy with her, which showed a different side of his personality, and he's never been able to get back to that, you know, ambulance tipper over thing. You know, not really been able to get back to that since. So he says, when the fiend changes you, he changes you too! She's this point. She's just like, if I can't talk to you, I'm gonna slap some sense to you. And then I love the way she says it. It's actually was very. This was a good part. She's like, I'm gonna have to slap some sense to you. Will you look at me while I'm talking to you? Because you won't. And I thought that was a really good, well put together beat of this scene. So he looks at her and she slaps the hell out of him, and he just smiles at her face, and she keeps slapping him and keeps slapping him, keeps slapping him. And so he scoops her up and puts her high up in the gorilla press. The lights start going out. Not retribution version, but fiend version, right? Not flickety, 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 flickety.
We're fourth graders and we found the light switch in the classroom. On, off, on, off, on, off, on, off.
Not that, but... and he's got her holding over his head.
Fiend, come out here! Come out here,
I guess. Or the implication is, or I'll kill her! And he fakes throwing her up the ramp. And the fiend doesn't come out. And he's standing there. And he just, like, presses her up in the air and steps back. And the lights go out. Now, this might have been better if they hadn't used the same... Whoopsie daisy, the lights went out so you couldn't see the act of violence. Because the lights come back on and Braun has vanished. And the fiend is in the ring and Alexa Bliss is selling like she got dropped off a 3-story building. And so the Strowman appears in the big screen. And he's like, and then the fiend starts laughing. And he laughs. They laugh and they laugh and they laugh. And then finally, after the dueling laughter, Strowman just goes, "Roar!" And the fiend sticks his tongue out through the mask. Now, I'm anticipating this is not going to go well. I think this is going to end up being some really bad stuff. But it's got Bray involved, and Bray is really fucking good at knowing what his characters are supposed to do. So there's a good chance. I would say a better chance if Bray wasn't involved. A better chance than if he was not involved. Of this being good at SummerSlam? Because I think Braun thinks that Bray, that the Fiend isn't ready for Monster Braun. And I think that the Fiend is kind of like the Emperor.
Give in to your hate. Give in to your anger. Join me in the dark side.
And that's the Fiend can control the monster. When the monster is just, you know, fucking rage, the Fiend feels like he can use that to his advantage. I think is what the story they're trying to tell. Which is why he's laughing back at him. Because he's not scared. Because this is all going to plan. Now they could also swerve us and have Alexa Bliss come down to the ring in the middle of the fucking match, dressed as Sister Abigail, and try to make out with the Fiend. And then Braun snaps out of it. He was fine the whole time. This was all a big plan that he and Alexa Bliss had worked out beforehand. And Alexa Bliss kicks the Fiend in the balls, and Braun hits the power slam. That exact scenario. The Fiend feels like he's in control of Braun, the monster Braun. And then out comes Sister Abigail Balexa, who tries to kiss the Fiend, but ends up kneeing him in the balls instead. And Braun Strowman wins with the power slam via that distraction. There is a much better chance of that exact scenario happening than anything good with this storyline. Final shot of the evening. Lemonade, the official beverage of Sour Graps. It gives you that sour power. Yeah. Yeah, that was SmackDown, and this is the Sour Graps, and I'm your host, Alex Pulowski. Hey, I got a shirt, some merch. That's a Sour Graps logo at shop.fightful.com. Support us. Thank you for subscribing to Fightful Select. I really enjoy doing these, and I hope you enjoy me yelling and pounding shots of lemonade. So, I mean, I gotta take a wicked, phenomenal intercontinental statistical system. I gotta piss. Everything sucks.